They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. All Movie BS is back together again. Do you remember the day when Jeff moved away? Well, he changed his mind and turned around. Now he's back to stay. All Movie BS is back together again.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Bear. Along with me, as always, my sidekick, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, I'm the host of this show, Eric D. Snyder. That's my BFF, Jeff Bear. It doesn't stand for what it usually stands for. I'm not going to tell you, though. Welcome to the show. You and I both have big news. Both of our lives have changed significantly since last week's show.
Hang on. Okay, I think I know my news. I don't know if I know your news.
It's the same news.
We both got
new TVs.
Yes.
Yours was not unexpected. Yours was planned.
Well, mine was planned, and then of course, my wife was able to convince me I didn't.
It was planned,
and then
it had to be submitted for review.
Yes. Turns out I was wrong in what I wanted.
And it went back and forth between both chambers of Congress for a while.
I wanted 65.
Right.
She agreed to 55, but then I found a better idea on a 50 with the plan of probably like 3 years from now turning one of the rooms in our house. Ugh. Oh, to say that just sounds – who am I? One of the
to have an extra room.
Oh.
Well, most people only have one room in their house. You're right.
We have four bedrooms in this place, man. And one of them in 3 years will become the guest room with a very comfortable pullout couch and at least a 65, if not 70 or 75 inch TV.
And we need to talk about that later. because I think that should be your basement. Not that room. Because the room is right next to your bedroom where your wife will often be sleeping while you're trying to watch things on your giant TV. It's fraught with peril. But yes.
I don't want more compromises. I just want what I want.
Why don't you want the basement? Wouldn't the basement be better anyway? Then it could be as big and loud as you want.
But I don't think we're going to finish. Like, the basement won't be finished anytime soon.
Not with that attitude. You just said you got 3 years.
Do I need gumption? I probably need some gumption.
You don't even need that much gumption to get something done in 3 years.
Well, here's the thing. For an unfinished basement to look how we want it, we're talking about a lot of money.
Right. Like I said, you got 3 years.
Right.
Save up. I also got a new TV.
Yes, you got a new TV.
Mine was a little bit unexpected, an unplanned new TV. But every new TV is precious in God's eyes. So let's...
How long has it been for you? I think it's been maybe eight years for me.
It's been almost 8 years. I remember I got my old TV, Panasonic 46 inch, right like the week that Obama was elected. I remember they coincided. Yeah. So 2008.
Because of that, yeah. Because of what Obama did.
Right. I got my free Obama TV as soon as he was elected. Anyway, so 7.5 years. And it's been in the process of dying about the last year or so. Every few months, it would not turn on, and I looked it up on the internet, and this is a thing that some Panasonic TVs do sometimes, and I just had to unplug it and plug it back in like the next morning, and it would do this every few months, just once, and then be fine, and then finally, it did it for the last time and would not come back on even after giving it time, so I went up to the old Best Buy, bought myself a TV. TVs are much cheaper now than they used to be.
It's
ridiculous. Which I knew. I'd been aware of that. They're also much lighter in weight.
Mm-hmm.
This new TV, 43-inch, what brand is it? I don't know. Sharp?
Uh-oh.
It might be a Sharp. No, it was a real brand. I saw some brands I didn't recognize. I didn't get any of those. No, it's 43-inch, and it weighs, with the stand, it weighs 19 pounds.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
My old TV with the stand, I weighed it 80 pounds.
Woo!
Yeah.
What'd you do with your old TV?
It's still sitting here. I got to figure out what to... I need to figure out if it would be worth getting it repaired and then selling it, or if the cost of getting it repaired wouldn't be what I would get anyway. Yeah. But you can't just, like, throw a TV in the dumpster.
No, mine's just going to be, like, away.
Just, you can put it out on the sidewalk and do the sign that says, works.
I think there's going to be the chance that it will eventually be, like, upstairs for the boys in the future.
If it's yeah.
Like, it's just like, all right, watch movies on that. It looks fine.
I forgot people who have more than one person in their house might need more than one TV at some point.
Mm-hmm. We're still operating on the one TV.
Yeah, which is plenty.
Well, and it's also, like, with... Why are we talking? We're just, I don't this know. Is the most boring.
Because we only have one movie to review. That's why.
That's true. But it's like, because I even said, I was like, should we put the TV in our bedroom for like, for, you know, when you're breastfeeding or when like for this or that?
Right.
And it's like, no, because I've watched programs on my iPhone and I don't care on certain, and the iPad is perfect.
Yeah,
too.
Your iPhone uses the iPad to watch stuff in the room. Yeah. And yeah.
It's like, no, you don't need it.
You know, let me tell you something else. This is true. Okay. This is what scientists say. To get better sleep, you shouldn't have a TV in your bedroom.
Agreed.
You shouldn't have anything in your bedroom other than – you shouldn't do anything in your bedroom other than sleep and do, you know, sexy time things. That should be all your bedroom is for. It shouldn't be for eating or watching TV or working out or anything. Your bedroom should only be associated with sleep, and that your brain responds and you sleep better when it's only a place for sleep.
Hang on. Do I have to take my clothes out of the bedroom now?
No, you can get dressed in the bedroom.
Okay. Can I have light bulbs in there? Like,
yes.
All right. I just wanted to make sure how deep we were going.
I know a lot about sleep because I got my Darth Vader sleep mask this week.
That's right.
Now had two nights on it.
And?
And I definitely sleep better.
Really?
The first night, I only got like 6.5 hours sleep because I was up too late and had to get up early. not the machine's fault. But even that 6.5 hours, I woke up feeling like, oh, wow, that felt like good sleep.
Is this going to change your life?
I hope so. That's the idea. Think how badly my life needs to change.
I know. But it's always awkward for me to be talking about it.
I hope this solves everything.
Well, what, like, do you think this leads to something? Do you think, oh, because of this, I am now going to do that?
I think, first of all, it'll probably take a few weeks, but I assume that once I'm getting enough restful sleep, I probably will not be gay anymore.
You think that had a correlation?
I assume that, yeah. No, no, I do.
Gays just historically don't sleep much? Is that the thing?
No, too much partying.
I have so much to learn still.
Yeah, you do have a lot to learn. No, but I do often during the day feel tired. I can, at about 4 o'clock any afternoon, I could lie down and take a half hour nap. Like that. I often feel tired. I often have trouble focusing, especially in the morning. There's a lot of things that could be the factor of not enough good sleep.
And you don't do caffeine, correct?
No.
Okay. See, I definitely, on two different occasions besides the morning, I normally turn to caffeine.
Right. Which I know is and I guess that's not an uncommon thing that people do.
I got to be honest. I drink more caffeine because I'm taking care of, like, my kids.
Right.
It's somehow associated, like, the energy that I'm using to take care of a kid is somehow more draining than my previous. It's not more stimulating. It's just more draining.
No, I can imagine that. Yeah.
So I've definitely turned to caffeine more.
It's
probably like my sixth best friend right now, I would say. I care more about caffeine. Like, if caffeine left me, mm-hmm. I'd rather have caffeine than you. So I guess maybe that's even higher.
Well, I guess, yeah. Or yeah. I'm lower than I thought.
Yeah,
but I often will get 8 hours of sleep in a night, and it's not enough, and I'm still dragging through the day. So, I'm excited, and it's not uncomfortable so far wearing the mask. No trouble with it.
That's good.
Just blows air up my nose all night.
You gotta put the mask on and get into bed and take a selfie like you're sleeping. Try to recreate what it looks like when you're actually sleeping. Don't just like eyes open kind of thing.
Look, I have a mask. Tonight will be the third night that I've intended to take a picture of myself with the mask on before I went to sleep. So far, I've forgotten both nights.
Because you're so tired.
I just, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do it. Do you ever feel like, well, now that I can get some sleep, I'm going to start running the 100-meter dash? Like Jesse Owens used to?
I'm sure I won't do it like Jesse Owens.
No.
80 years ago and in Germany. There's no way I'm doing that.
He used to race.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what else? Speaking of race.
Yeah.
He also was a race.
That's true. That's
true. He was of a black race.
Hang on, hang on, hang on. This movie might have a double meaning with its title.
It might. And, you know, I don't even blame them for calling it race. Because how can you resist? When you got a movie that's about racing and about racism.
Oh, right.
They're not made of stone. They couldn't resist. Of course, it's called race. I have no problem with that.
It'd either be that or two different kinds of race spelled the same way. Like, that's what they could have called it, too.
Racing against racism. And actually, the title fits the movie in that it's earnest and it's straightforward and it's a little on the nose.
Oh, a little on the nose? Goodness.
Let's talk about race.
Let's talk about this movie called
Race. Which race is your favorite?
Well, now, hang on. What do we... I like...
Mine is white people. I'm just going to say it.
See, I would go with the 200 meter.
Yeah?
Yeah. But we're different that way.
We are
like you see color, and I see racing as something.
I see color, and I love it.
Yep. All right. So we got this guy here by the name of Stephen James, and he's Jesse Owens.
I need to find out if it's Stephen or Stefan.
Okay.
I forgot to do that. Because it's spelled S-T-P-H-A-N, which is often Stefan.
And we start in 1933, Cleveland, and he's running. And he's already got his college scholarship?
Going off to the Ohio State University. Yeah.
Good job on knowing that, the Ohio State.
I saw them. I made a note of it because I saw the sign.
Oh, it's very important.
The Ohio State University.
Most people actually, most people from Ohio State would actually capitalize the.
Yeah.
And just be like, it's a big deal.
It's not just Ohio State University. It is
the. You know how Jesse Owens got really good at running?
Mm-hmm. How did he?
I have no clue.
Oh, no. I assume he just always was.
And why this was his way out or what his motivation was or if his family cared about him trying hard to run in particularly, no clue.
Yeah, this is – it's not so
I
much –
I have no clue
it's not
what
really,
he's doing.
But it's not really a Jesse Owens biopic because it only covers the span of really just a year in his life, the big –
It's the important
year.
Stuff.
Yeah, the important stuff. And there really – there hasn't been a Jesse Owens movie before. There was a TV miniseries in the 80s, and that's pretty much it as far as movie treatments of Jesse Owens, which is surprising because he's it's still a household name. Like, everyone knows who Jesse Owens is.
Everybody knows, yes.
So I'm glad there is finally a movie, even if it's, not as much detail. They really don't give us much on the family at all.
The dad doesn't want to talk, and he is clear – like, it's obvious that he's unemployed and pretty much lives his life upstairs. And that's
the Depression. Everyone's unemployed in the Depression.
It's weird because we're introduced to two characters here, Jesse Owens and then Jason Sudeikis' character, Larry Sanders, who played Snyder. Larry Snyder, who plays the real life coach at the Ohio State University. And it is such – an awful it's so unfortunate how they showcase the beginning of both these characters, because Jesse Owens is surrounded by love and support and optimism. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty boring on his way to college. That's it. That's all. That's the introduction there. Whereas the coach has had a rough year. He's either a drunk or just likes to drink. He's down and out.
That you think there's a difference between a drunk and likes to drink.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just kind of like, oh, well, you're making me more interested in the coach when this is Jesse Owens' movie. And immediately it made me think, oh, this is the Willie Mays story that we saw last year. I'm sorry, Jackie Robinson.
Oh, 42. Goodness. Yeah, yeah.
42. Mm-hmm. It's just that thing of, all right, here we go. Supposedly the white man's going to be the more interesting character that we're dealing with here. You're adding more layers to his story.
I get what you're saying. I never for a moment found the coach more interesting than Jesse Owens. Partly because
after that, yes,
but
I
even
agree
at the beginning, even the first okay. minutes. And Jason Sudeikis, it's his first dramatic role, and he's fine, but not great.
He is doing 100% serviceable
doing drama, and it helps that he has a comedy background because he has a good rapport with Stephen or Stephen James, who plays Jesse Owens, and I like their coach athlete relationship.
I like it, but again, this movie is lazy in that it really feels like somebody just read the Wikipedia page on Jesse Owens and was like, "All right, I'm going to make a movie out of this," because the coach introduces new exercises. Mm-hmm. He actually says, "Hey, I have some new exercises." There's no reason why. There's no fighting it. There's no interest there. Like there's all these things that we keep seeing, and it's just like, yeah, we're just moving through the motions. Here's a different woman, but we're not gonna like make you feel bad for Jesse Owens or make you dislike him a lot here. We're just gonna he had a fling,
he's
and it's
tempted,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's a woman back home, and 20 minutes has gone by, so then. We're going to insert some racist comments here from somebody. Let's see. Oh, football team, you guys do it this time. Oh, you guys do it this time. And it's just like, all right, we're just going through motions here. Give me something interesting. Give me something I didn't know. Make it look like Jesse Owens struggled with something, like inward.
Yeah, he does have some internal struggles, but they overall, the whole movie is pretty surface level. He struggles. You know, the whole issue is they're going to have the Olympics in Berlin, and this is 1936, and the Nazis, you know how they are.
I've heard.
And so Jeremy Irons, representing the American Olympic Association, goes to Germany to personally tell Joseph Goebbels to take it down a notch and that they better not mess with the Americans, Jewish or black athletes, or there's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
And so then it's resolved that we won't boycott the games, but it's still up to the individual players, and that's Jesse's internal struggle. And I wish that the movie had done more. There's so many complexities here, not like moral dilemmas. There's Jesse's yes. thing about whether he would be a better example to the black community by going or by not going, and the NAACP thinks he shouldn't go. There's also over in Germany, you got Leni Riefenstahl, the filmmaker, played by Carice Van Houten here, who's been recruited by Goebbels to document everything and to show how great Germans are. But then there's a conflict there because what if the Germans don't win everything?
Right. And it doesn't seem to be her motivation. Like she seems to have her own agenda. That to me would have been that would have been fascinating. I don't
someone
know.
Someone will do a movie about Leni Riefenstahl someday, and that will be interesting.
Yes.
And this movie barely scratches the surface of any of the moral dilemmas.
There's two Jewish Americans on the team, mm-hmm. and they have a dilemma, and that feels so utterly false with the way that the movie deals with it. Because again, it's really weird that it's focus features behind this movie because it just feels kind of Disney-ish, and focus features normally has a history of diving a little bit deeper with their material than what this offers.
I don't ever think that it's lazy or. Whatever the other word is that you just used, it just doesn't go very far. It doesn't go very deep. But I don't think that it's badly done. I think it's just sort of adequately, nicely done.
Yeah, nice is too nice of a word, though. Like it's adequately done. Absolutely, yes.
There's a lot of on the nose dialogue, like the time in the Olympics when the announcer says, This is the true spirit of sportsmanship we're seeing between these two athletes today. In case you didn't know that what you were watching was an example of sportsmanship.
Right.
Thanks for explaining it, announcer.
And there's two, I can't remember if I jotted them down or not. There's two callbacks. Oh, yeah. One is you never asked.
There's
and then there was another
those,
one.
Yeah.
And it's just as soon as the sentence begins from one character, you're like, oh, you're repeating this line that I heard.
Oh, it's this thing that we said earlier. Yeah, we're going to come back and say
that
again.
And that way, dumb people in the audience can go like, oh, I was there a half hour ago when he said that. Oh, he's turned the tables. Do you see it?
You get one of those per movie, and this one does it a few times.
Yes. There's a Walter White that I didn't know of from our past, so that was interesting.
Different
there was
Walter
a secretary,
White. Yeah.
Secretary Walter White. One thing. So there's a German long jump athlete in the film that's he has an eye twitch. And they do like close-ups on him, and he's got an eye twitch. And it was one of like I've had an eye twitch when I haven't slept well.
Yeah,
like you know I'll get an eye twitch. So I it was just I noticed it, and I noticed it in two different scenes, and I was just kind of curious. It was like, is this an actor who just has an eye twitch? And they're like, ah, who cares? Let's just film it and move on.
I didn't notice it, but that actor's name is David Cross. I bet you didn't notice that.
I didn't notice that. Cross with a K.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's good to know. Jeremy Irons and William Hurt in this movie for a little bit.
Yeah, for a minute.
Yeah, man, yeah. Yeah, I'm really surprised there was no point where Jason Sudeikis turned to somebody and said, I didn't change him. He changed me. Or I didn't train him. He trained me. Because
glad that didn't happen.
but it was expected in this very ordinary film that doesn't do anything. It just exists. And again, it's like, oh, this Wikipedia page has come to life. Fine.
On the other hand, nobody else has filmed that Wikipedia page yet.
I know.
So at least someone finally did.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's, you know, it's a placeholder until someone makes a better, more exhaustive biography of Jesse Owens. B minus. Yeah.
5 out of 10, mainly lower because at one point, the announcer said it's damp and overcast. And it was just like a mostly sunny day. And that really bugged me.
That's fair. Tough, but
thanks.
Fair.
Thanks.
All right. So then the other movies that are opening this week, one is called Risen and it looks like,
what are you talking about?
Joseph Fiennes is in it. It looks like the movie.
Don't make stuff up.
It looks like the movie that they're making in Hail Caesar. It's about like a centurion. They're looking for what happened to Jesus' body after they crucified him. This is a real movie that's really coming out in wide release. 2,000 screens.
Now you're pushing it too far. Now
it wasn't screened for critics in Portland. I guess they're afraid we'll give away the ending. I don't know. They did screen in Seattle, though, which is the same publicist. So I guess Portland just doesn't matter enough. So that Risen, and then also, at the opposite end of the spectrum, The Witch is also opening in surprisingly wide release. That's going to be a disaster, by the way. 1,800 screens. This movie is going to be a huge flop.
Yep.
Because a lot of people are not going to like it. Yep. And they've done a terrible job promoting it, like on a local level. Case in point, they scheduled a screening here at the last minute and at the same time as something else. So again, maybe it's just Portland. Maybe the studios all just don't think Portland is worth paying attention to.
Oh, don't say that.
It would be sad, but then maybe that's what it is. Anyway, we saw it at Fantastic Fest, so we're going to replay our review from it here, I guess.
The Witch, it's old England, New England Puritans, 1600s, little Puritan family. Exiled, living out by themselves, mom and a dad and a teenage daughter and a son and a couple of twins.
Yeah.
And they speak in very authentic, old-timey Puritan 1600s language, which I figured they would because I knew the time period was set. I didn't realize that they were how realistic they were going to go. They didn't just throw in some these and thous. Like, this is full-on.
Everything feels tremendously correct.
Yeah,
with the time period
and
the look of the film, everything about it.
They
rings
start
true
to
for
have.
The time period.
There's a baby. They have a baby, Samuel, and then there's a tragedy with the baby, and then there are some weird things happening, like out in the woods near the house, maybe in the house, maybe there's something. Well, the movie's called The Witch,
yeah.
So dark things begin to happen.
And then sometimes not much happens.
Mm-hmm. But while not much is happening, it's boiling and it's becoming, it really did feel to me like an oppressive, the atmosphere was oppressive, that even when there was quote unquote nothing happening, that something was happening, that the situation, the water was getting slightly hotter, coming to a boil. I felt it. I was into it. But it's not the kind of movie that is scary in the way of it's going to give you nightmares or that it's like a constant
Oh, goodness,
or even
no.
a frequent thrill ride. It is a different kind of scary movie
right.
from that, and I think that's important to know.
And not only that, it's told, I guess, let's see, there isn't, I don't think there's much wiggle room with this story. It's offering a folk tale, but it's mm-hmm. doing it in an authentic way. So it, right. like, yes, and like there, you know, it is called The Witch.
Right.
And it is a story that they would have passed around.
Sure.
During that time. Why would they have told this story? This particular story, why is that? This is not, this is one of my things with it that I was curious about. It doesn't feel like it's good versus evil.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it's believers versus non-believers. Although it's definitely, religion is touched upon quite a bit in the film.
I think it's meant to be indicative of the sort of thing that happened back in this time when this is, you know, before the Salem witch trials, but when witches were a thing, or people were afraid of witches anyway. And so I think this is meant to be the sort of thing where that would happen often, where a family's like, is there a witch in our midst? Is yeah. one of us a witch?
Explain the hard to explain.
Yeah.
That's
is
what
there,
this...
Is right. there maybe no such thing as witches, but we're all paranoid mm-hmm. about who might be the witch? And I think, it, for me, it plays well into that of, we have the father who is a devout religious man, who even at one point starts to think, maybe I'm the problem here. Maybe I have done right. something wrong. And they all go through that of, is it me? Is it you? Is it her and him? And always coming back to this religious repression of being sort of tamped down. The boy has lustful feelings for his sister a little mm-hmm. bit. And he thinks, well, maybe that's it. And all these things of how we will, yeah, and how in those days they would have used unexplained phenomenon to
right.
use that. No, what am I trying to say? Use their, oh, I sinned, that's why this thing happened. Or I'm not right with God, that's why these things are happening.
But maybe that's not why those things
but
happen.
But maybe it's not. Exactly. Maybe it's all on our heads. Maybe it's not.
Or maybe it's not.
And maybe I don't, it is.
But I don't think this movie... I don't think this movie touches on that for me because it states what it is throughout the film. Like, it states what it is. It doesn't leave it open-ended to question or wonder.
Eventually it doesn't, but along the way...
Along the way it kind of sort of does, but not really.
It could all... There doesn't seem to be any question of whether there's an evil force involved
right.
here. The question is who or what is bringing it, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I found this movie technically engaging, and the story was boring for me. And I know that I'm kind of alone on this.
Oh, you're not kind of alone.
I'm completely alone.
You're alone like Matt Damon on Mars.
Like, I enjoyed all of the effort
yeah.
and accuracy that this movie holds, and therefore it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
But B plus.
I did not enjoy the story.
I liked it very much. Very, very much.
It's an intense musical score.
Mm, it is very intense.
Yeah.
So that was The Witch, which I really wanted to see again, but I didn't have a chance.
I kind of wanted to see it.
Because of the distributor. Now let's talk about this weekend, if you're in Mississippi.
I'm not.
I know, but if you were, you would see me there.
No, I'm not, though.
I know, but if you were going to be, I'll be
I'm not going.
Oxford, the Oxford Film Festival. I'm on a jury. I'm a rural juror.
What jury this time?
This time I'm on the narrative features jury, the big time. I was on documentary features last year, and I've been on some shorts juries before.
And they keep moving you around because it doesn't work out.
Every year I always
just... So they're like,
just,
maybe he can deal with this better.
I always just vote for the shortest movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
this year, the narrative features jury. I've watched them all, and they're good.
How many did you watch?
Five of them. All five of them.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's only a weekend-long festival.
Okay.
So they don't do like 15 like Sundance does.
How many would you give a B- or better out of those five?
Some of the
Oh,
five.
you don't want to reveal?
I shouldn't say at this point.
Okay. Do you think one of them could be associated with the word great?
I wouldn't say that any of them are great.
Would you say Pretty good.
Some of them are pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
And mostly the fun thing about Oxford is I get to eat a lot of food and go to parties.
And you, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't really have to work once you arrive there.
Right. I just have to meet with the other jurors and we'll do our deliberations for a few minutes.
Do you know any of them?
Mm-mm. Nope. So that'll be fun.
Have you thought about your handshake?
It's my standard handshake. I have a good handshake.
I'm just saying you should consider using the left arm to touch their right elbow.
No, I'm not a fan of that, usually.
It asserts some authority. They'll look at you differently.
I have a good, firm handshake. I can receive compliments on my handshake on a regular basis.
Okay. Maybe
so
they're just
I don't
being
need
nice.
Handshake advice.
I'm just saying maybe they're being nice.
How many times have you shaken my hand?
Ugh. Too many. Clam anyway. City.
It's not true. I have a firm, and I don't trust a man with a weak handshake.
If somebody catches me wrong, I explain to them that we're shaking hands again. Yeah. And I don't necessarily blame them, but sometimes I do. Sometimes I throw them under the bus immediately. It's like, oh, how could you? No, no, right. No. We're doing this again.
Right, right. Well, you're not the one who messes it up, obviously.
No, I know what I'm doing.
You? Exactly. Right. Yeah. So Oxford Film Festival, that will be fun, I assume, because it usually is. That's where I'll be.
You normally have a very nice time there.
Mm-hmm. Again, because there's not much work.
There you go.
Go to parties, eat food, watch some movies, other than the ones I've already watched. Speaking of movies.
Yes?
Next Sunday, the Oscars.
The Oscars. Hey, my wife asked, are you coming over to watch the Oscars?
Oh, yeah?
Are you?
I guess.
All right, good.
Probably.
Well, we didn't do it last year. You didn't want to come over last year.
No, you didn't live here last year.
You didn't come over.
I did not fly to San Diego for the Oscars. That's true.
Didn't I? Oh, wait. That's right. I did that last year, like the day before.
Oh, yeah. You had some crazy idea.
I had the crazy idea of like, I will buy you a plane ticket. Come watch the Oscars.
Yeah. That was insane.
And you're like, meh.
I think I was like, that sounds like a waste of money.
Actually, no. No, you thought about it, but you had to do
something. I had some other obligation that weekend, too.
Because you were Mormon, you weren't allowed. It was something to do with that.
I had something else going on. Yeah, that's true.
It was like your days of the week.
It also would have been a huge waste of money. Well, I would rather you just give me that money.
That wasn't the offer.
I know, but I'm saying.
The world doesn't work that way.
Well, but it should.
Were you thinking of doing something nice for me? Can I just have that in money? Don't do the nice thing for me. Just give me the cash.
Don't you hate when someone gives you a present and it's not a good present and you wish that you could explain to them how to give you the right present? I know you do because you complained about it before.
But I don't want the alternative to be here's some money.
You want the alternative to be just don't do anything.
Don't do anything or get me a great gift. You have two choices.
All right. Well, those are your choices in this case. And a great gift was not an option because that would have been a bad gift. So you did nothing. And that's fine. The point is,
we're going to watch Oscars, the Oscars.
Yeah. And every year we do the Oscar bowling thing.
Oscar bowling thing created by, let's see, who was it? Jeff Baer created
this. You invented
this. A few years back. It's probably going to be the one thing that I'm known for, even though only probably like 20 people do it. But I don't have anything better to show for my life right now. So this is it. This is number one, Oscar bowling.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. So can we see if I can explain it?
Oh, yes.
All right.
Do you want me to let you explain the entire thing or do you want me to interrupt if I feel like you've mis-explained it?
Tell me if I get anything wrong as we go.
As we go. Okay.
Yeah. How many categories are there? 24 or 25?
24.
24 categories. Here's what you do. You take the Oscar nominations, you go through, and you make your prediction who's going to win for each of the categories. That's your first step.
You're doing great.
Thank you. Then you arrange them in order of how confident you are. The one that you're positive, you bet your life, you're definitely right, that's worth 24 points.
Yes.
And then 23, 22, on down to the one that you're just taking a wild guess, you know, like documentary short or whatever. You have no idea. So, and that's worth the fewest points. 1 point.
That's right. One is the fewest.
It's the fewest, yeah. And so then when you, as they present the awards over the course of the 6-hour presentation, if you correctly predicted it, then you award yourself however many points you had associated with that category. And then it all adds up to 300, 24 plus 23 plus 22, et cetera.
Yes, and there's
that's the why it's bowling.
That's why it's bowling, because the perfect game is 300. So, yeah, we will probably next weekend we will have our picks up. This week I'll make sure to link to the explanation of how to do it. It's really fun. I enjoy it. A lot of people have played in the past with us. Nobody's ever beaten me, so that's cool. I like
nobody
that.
In the room with you has ever beaten you. We've had listeners beat you.
Actually, that's not true.
No, that's not even true. Your wife beat us both one year.
I think the first.
Yeah, just randomly guessing. Year. Your wife, who has never seen a movie.
Never. She doesn't even know. Like, when I say the word film, she thinks I'm just saying film, and she doesn't even know what I'm referring to. Yeah.
I like it. I like the Oscar bowling because it's not just who gets the most right. Like you and I could both correctly predict the same number of categories, but have hugely different scores depending on our confidence. Adds a little bit more skill and strategy to the game.
Skill, strategy, and I think fun throughout the evening, because then it's a matter of like, ooh, we both got this right. How many points did you get? Oh my gosh, you got 20? I only got 4.
Right.
Oh boy, oh boy. Or if you miss one and it's a big one and
things can change a lot over the course of the night.
Things can go up and down. If you're with a group, it's great. If you're alone, like
sad.
Most of you are, sad and alone, this is something you can do, and then you can pretend we're next to you on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you don't even have a couch. Maybe we're sitting down on the floor in your imagination.
In your hovel. In the squalid, dank shack you live in.
You can put your ear down to the floor so you can hear the apartment below you, because they have a TV and they're watching the Oscars. So maybe that's how you do it. I don't know.
So we'll put our predictions online before the Oscars.
Yeah,
and
definitely by Saturday of next week, ours will be there.
Definitely by Sunday before the Oscars start. Yeah, pretty much. And you can you don't have to post your predictions, but you can play along, and we'll see who got the best score. It's the honor system. You kind of don't lie to us about the score you got.
Yeah. Don't do that. And that's it. That's Oscar bowling.
Mm-hmm. Good times. You know what I miss?
Oh, what? What do you miss?
We used to do this thing. Do you remember this? We used to do a thing called. It was like question of the week.
Question of the week. No, that was like a. Oh wait, that was us.
Yeah. We used to do that, and it was fun. And then we stopped for a while.
You know why? We stopped trying because we felt like we gave all we could to the question of the week, and there was just no more room for the effort and new questions and participation. And I came up with a question that just. It put a sour note on all of it. Like, we ruined Question of the Week for a while.
I had to step away.
I was disgusted.
I don't think that I put everything I had into it. I definitely put all that I was going to put into it.
Yeah. Your happiest times on this show have been when you've gotten to tell everybody that we won't be doing a Question of the Week the following week.
It's always such a relief.
You are so happy when that happens. But guess what? The listeners have come through big time and given us approximately like 1.5 million questions of the week that we can use in the future.
Yeah, you guys gave us a lot of good suggestions. Thank you. You gave us some terrible suggestions too, but that's the thing about brainstorming. There's no bad answers. There's answers we won't use because they're stupid, but there's no wrong suggestions.
Who was it that went above and beyond? Do you recall?
No.
Somebody was just amazing, giving us like actual – multiple questions and like to go along with like when movies come out.
Specifically pegged to new releases.
Patrick Felton.
Thanks, Patrick Felton. We're not using one of Patrick's questions today.
We are not, but hang on. He gave us 13 questions.
Wow.
How many did you people give us? He gave us 13. What I did for him? I clicked that little thumbs up thing to show him that we liked that.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, it's what I could do.
The question of the week that we're going to ask comes from Nathaniel. And the question he asks, what quote from a movie do you use most regularly in everyday speech? So you got to think about that one. Not just your favorite movie quote or one that comes up a lot. The one that you use the most often in everyday speech. That's your question of the week.
You know what my TV one is?
Hmm.
All right, sir.
Yeah, what is that from?
That is from Elaine to Jerry on Seinfeld. And the weird part is,
I can picture it.
It's when they're discussing the this and the that, and whether they should add sex to their relationship, to their friendship.
Sex to save the friendship. That one?
Yes. Yep. Oh,
okay.
And at one point, he says something, and she just goes, "All right, sir." And I don't know why, but I use it constantly. It's stuck in.
You
I don't
say
even
that.
Use
I've
it.
Heard you say that.
I use it even when I'm not referring to sex.
That's true. I'll have to think about what mine is. There's a few contenders. We have a week. We have a week to come up with the answer.
Yeah, we have a week, but yours is going to be from Anchorman, probably.
Possibly.
Maybe not.
Not as far – not that I
not
actually
as far
use
as
on a
use,
daily basis.
Right.
Yeah.
I forever was saying milk was a bad idea, and I don't think that's actually the line.
I think it's milk was a bad choice.
Yeah. Whereas I was saying milk was a bad
idea. Did I tell you about the time that it was 105 degrees in Portland, and I was in downtown Portland, and I got a donut from Voodoo Donuts and a carton of milk? And I actually got to drink milk on a hot day and actually legitimately say milk was a bad choice.
Were you alone?
No, I was with a friend who got to appreciate it. Yeah, it worked out. Yeah. So we'll have this on Facebook. You can post your answers there. You can always email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter as well.
Oh, yeah. MovieBS.
MovieBS. We're barely on Twitter. Let's be honest, because you're on Twitter, and I'm kind of on Twitter, but MovieBS is barely on Twitter.
I finally added the MovieBS Twitter account to my Twitter app. So
you know,
I
could. You know what I could see us doing?
Now.
I could see us having conversations with people on MovieBS.
I could see that happening.
Twitter. I could see that happening. If people wanted to. Mm-hmm. That would be a good place for them to ask us, like, hey, what movie should I watch tonight?
That's true.
That's where that should happen. And if they do ask that question, they should give us a couple
of choices. Yeah, hit us up at MovieBS on Twitter. That will also make us use that Twitter more if people are talking to
us
on it.
Yes, 100%. We will engage if you engage. Mm-hmm. And then we'll all engage.
So tell us what movie – how do we phrase it? What movie quote – what quote from movie do you use most regularly in everyday speech?
Be
sure and tell us what movie it's from too, just in case we're dumb, because we might not know.
We might not know.
Stop doing that.
Okay.
Hey, what'd you watch?
Well, it's not a movie, but I'm going to keep talking. I know. I've watched the first two episodes of Horace and Pete, and I am a sucker for
this. This is an episode? It's a television program?
Oh, you don't even understand the future. Mm. Here's what Louis C.K. did. He decided... I'm just going to make a TV show, but it's not a TV show. It's a show, and I filmed it, and do you want to buy it from me on my website? Here you go. Go right ahead. You just own it. First one was $5. Second one was $2, and then future episodes are $3. Steve Buscemi and Alan Alda round out the cast with some others, and there are special guest stars, and it is filmed very quickly. I would say it's probably like – 2 or 3 days of filming.
What's the format of the show? What's it about?
It is about Horace and Pete and how generationally these two different families have always had a Horace and a Pete running this bar.
All right.
And that's the majority of it. And people come in and out of this bar. And it is a hardcore towny bar that doesn't want to tolerate it. Alan Alda couldn't be more of a... amusing, old, racist, angry man. He's really on top of his game. It feels like you're watching the closest thing you can to live theater, because you won't necessarily see mistakes, but it's not clean. Mm. Like there, you'll notice some hesitation.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep moving through the scene. And I love that because it's just terribly unique. It's a different way to enjoy.
Most TV shows fix their mistakes before they air them. That's true. Yeah.
It's not slick, but you can tell. It's also like
slick, but it is expensive.
It is expensive. I do realize that I will watch anything that this man creates. He has never disappointed me yet with how much effort he puts into trying to create entertainment for me.
I do love Louis C.K. and I'm sure I'll enjoy it. I'm wary of spending $3 an episode for any show, considering most shows are basically free, or it's, you know, $8 a month for unlimited whatever.
Yes. No, it is a very interesting idea for him to attempt, because I do completely understand how it prices some people out.
Yeah.
But guess what? Hmm. Like, I just have the episodes now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like,
I can watch them at your house.
You're a friend.
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, and then Rob Hunter at Film School Rejects made me watch Oslo, August 31st.
Oh, yeah.
For Remedial Film School that I do at Film School Rejects. And that will be up at the end of the month. I did watch it. And then I rewatched Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Which I was pretty high on.
I remember you wouldn't stop talking about it all year.
It's all right. No. It's still terribly enjoyable, but it didn't have the pep on second view that it did the first. And sometimes like a Mission Impossible or something like that is able to keep the pep.
Yeah.
And this lost a little pep. It mainly made me think, it's too bad I won't be getting a sequel to this, because it felt like they really were in a comfortable spot with like the four main characters, right. And I would have enjoyed another adventure with them. And it doesn't, because it bombed, I can't imagine it's going to ever have a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah. So it goes.
Yeah.
Did it bomb? I'm going to look it up right now.
I think it kind of sort of bombed.
I haven't watched anything other than my jury movies for the Oxford Film Festival. It only made $45 million. But it made $109 million worldwide.
Huh.
It made back its money, but not much.
Yeah.
If it develops enough of a cult following, maybe it'll get a sequel.
Well, maybe people won't listen to the fact that the shine went off it on second view.
Maybe they'll just go back and hear your first opinion.
Yeah.
Let's play a game.
What game would you like to play?
Character Casserole.
Done and done.
Here's how we play Character Casserole. Jeff Baer is looking up the list of the highest grossing movies of all time, adjusted for inflation.
200. The top 200.
Top 200 highest grossing films of all time. I have a random number generator. We will choose three movies at random, and we'll choose a character from each movie and make up a new movie with those three characters. It's very simple. You'll see how it works. Our first random number, 100.
Hmm.
The 100th highest grossing movie of all time.
Doesn't sound so random. Oh, 1953, originally made $23 million.
1953, Roman Holiday.
No, House of Wax.
Wow. Vincent Price, one of those old cheesy horror movies. All right.
So let's find a character that like is the, in
the,
House
the,
of
probably
Wax.
the main bad guy is going to be our best bet there. No, Wikipedia. Why would I want the 2005 remake? Come on.
Let's see. An associate burns down a wax museum with the owner inside, but he survives only to become vengeful and murderous.
I'm going to assume that Vincent Price is the vengeful
Professor
murderer.
Henry Jarrett. Yeah. Yes.
So Vincent
yes.
Price.
Vincent Price. Professor
Vincent Price, best known as the voice of the song Thriller.
Do you think he's better known as – yeah, he probably is better known as that than
probably,
Edward,
yeah,
Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. All right. Next random number, 41. The 41th highest grossing movie.
Remember that time when you got all three?
I do.
Feels like forever ago. 1940, originally made $84
million. 1940, is it Disney? And,
yes.
Fantasia?
No.
Pinocchio?
Yes.
All right.
Should we go with Pinocchio here or Geppetto?
Let's go with Pinocchio.
Okay, Pinocchio and Professor Henry Jarrett.
Ooh, and now number 11. The 11th highest grossing film of all time.
Are you kidding me? Did you do this on purpose?
No. It's a random number generator.
2015.
Let's see. Is Star Wars up there already? Force Awakens?
Yep.
All right.
So before it was adjusted for inflation, It made $916,860,978.
Right.
But when you adjust it for inflation, it's $916,861,000. So do you see how, like, we've already –
So if we've got a vengeful old professor –
And Pinocchio. Do we want somebody that's in between them? Do we want somebody out of nowhere? Do we want – oh, let's just go – let's go Ray.
Ray? All right. Yeah.
Let's go Ray because now I know Pinocchio's motivation, if you know what I mean.
Ray, she's a ray of sunshine is what she is.
Oh.
So, all right. So we've got a mad scientist of some kind.
Yes. And Pinocchio, made out of wood or a real boy?
He's made out of wood. This is maybe like during his adventures as a wooden boy.
Okay. All right.
And probably the mad scientist, the vengeful wax museum owner guy, sees Pinocchio as a chance to go even further than the wax museum. What if I had not wax figures, but actual living puppets?
Yes.
How do I capture Pinocchio and like recreate him?
Right. So, and the way that he finds out, his motivation here is he notices that Pinocchio notices Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's Ray doing there? Just passing through? Is she a tourist?
Ray, no, she's looking for her family.
Oh, okay.
She's got that motivation still. Right. She's like, oh, where is my family again? Yeah. I totally misplaced them.
All right.
So she's doing that. Is BB-8 with her?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. All right, cool. So they're doing that, and Pinocchio is totally into Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of drops the hint that she's really only into real boys.
Right, not wooden puppets.
Yeah. And so Professor Henry Jared is like, oh, I can make you a real boy.
Oh, yeah.
But that's Pinocchio. That's not what he's up to.
Yeah.
What he wants to do is open up Pinocchio and figure out how this puppet's real.
Right. Figure out by what dark magic this puppet has come to life.
That's what he's doing.
So, yes, much like Deadpool, Pinocchio falls for the dumb trap of, here, let me fix you and make you better.
That's right. And Professor Henry actually does open him up and kind of disforms him.
Now he's mutilated?
He's mutilated.
Now he's a monster Pinocchio.
Yeah, like one of his legs is just mulch now.
Oh, now he's Pinocchio. Pinocchio, because he's gross looking. Is this thing on?
So then Ray is once again in position of being the rescuer.
She has to rescue Pinocchio from the clutches of evil Dr. Vincent Price.
Yeah, and break Pinocchio's heart when it's all said and done. Because she's like, yeah, I'm not in you. You look even worse than before, Pinocchio. She said,
I'm not into you now, but let me know if you're ever a real boy. And that way we know in the future.
Oh, they could be together.
Yeah. Because we know that eventually he becomes a real boy.
Nice. Does she use the force in this movie? I think she does.
Probably.
Oh, this is her thing of she now knows that she knows how to use the force, but she has no idea how to use the force.
And every time she uses the force, her nose grows.
Yes. That's, of course.
I like the idea of her using the force and Pinocchio using his growing nose. Like, somehow they work together. Pinocchio has to tell a lie to make his nose grow to reach a switch or something.
She bends it into, like, to unlock something.
There you go. Yeah.
With her mind. Is anybody being melted in any sort of way? Or I guess the wax.
I like the idea that maybe the mad scientist actually does figure out how to bring puppets to life. Like in addition to mutilating Pinocchio, he actually achieves his goal and creates an army of puppets.
Oh, he's being used for evil.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, and then she's got to defeat lots of puppets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like Pinocchio's really torn because it's like those are kind of his brothers. And she's mowing them down.
Yeah, I like that. All right. And it also kind of calls back the Sorcerer's Apprentice from Fantasia.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good one. It'll be good for the kids. The kids will like this.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of deformed puppets and puppets being murdered. Yeah, that's a good one. What do we call it?
Well, we call it Let's see. Scientist, evil, hope, force, nose, forcing my nose on you.
Force of puppet force.
The force knows.
All right. The force knows. All right.
Nose spelled like, you know, nose.
Yeah. Okay.
Like nose. You know how to spell nose.
Mm-hmm. N-O-S-E. Yeah. There you go. That's how you play Character Casserole. You can play along at home with the home version. And that's the show. Race is all right.
Yeah. It's super ordinary.
I liked it more than you did.
Yes. Why?
It's not a judgment, just a statement of fact.
But why?
I don't know.
There we go. There's
a problem. I'm less racist than you.
No, you're not.
And then Risen, they didn't show to us. The Witch is also whatever.
You liked it more than me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's also true. You heard our review from several months ago. And a question of the week. Tell us what movie quote you use most often in your daily life.
Yes, please do.
Please do. And we'll talk about all that next week.
Hey, Eric.
Hmm.
Have a good time in Oxford.
Hey, thanks. I will. So until next week, for Movie Us with Bayer and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bayer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.